On his way to work that day, he had justified his proposal before the cabinet meeting and the military chiefs with an argument that he had not raised during the cabinet meeting. Quote, "This morning, when I saw Jewish children playing outside, I decided, no, never again," end quote. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 280, The Cabinet Meeting and the Children of Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In the fall of 1980, an extraordinary meeting of the Israeli cabinet and military leadership took place in Jerusalem. Those there had met to discuss, debate, and vote on Prime Minister Begin's adamant demand that the Iraqi nuclear reactor in Osirak be destroyed in an Israeli operation. As Avi Shilon informs us in his biography of Begin, the Prime Minister had already for some time become convinced that a bombing of the reactor by Israel was the only proper course of action. Yet, what had convinced him all the more was an experience right before that meeting, an experience involving not senior military experts or intelligence officers, but rather a moment watching much more inexperienced Israelis in the blissful enjoyment of a morning in Jerusalem. It was this moment that spoke volumes to Begin, and that therefore should speak volumes to us. And perhaps Begin himself was unaware of how profoundly this experience connected him to a famous Talmudic tale about Jerusalem recorded so many centuries before. Today, we associate Operation Apra, the bombing of Osirak, with 1981 in the summer days prior to Shavuot. But Shilon's biography, to which this episode is indebted, informs us that actually the question of what to do about the reactor was one on which Begin was focusing from the very moment he came into office. Indeed, during the transfer of power from the previous administration, Yitzhak Rabin had informed Begin of the issue, and precisely during the swirl of incredible events surrounding Sadat's visit to Jerusalem and the negotiations at Camp David, Begin had also engaged in discussions with his cabinet about the matter, with a debate originally unfolding between Ariel Sharon and Yigal Yadin. Shilon writes, quote, "On October 23, 1978, shortly before leaving for Camp David, Begin convened the Ministerial Committee for National Security Affairs to decide how to act. Sharon, the most decisive of all, proposed that any Arab country that attempted to develop nuclear arms would be regarded as initiating war, and demanded that Israel prepare to bomb the Iraqi reactor. Yadin had the most misgivings. He argued that Iraq's plans to develop a bomb could not be thwarted by military means, and suggested that the diplomatic channels be exhausted first. Supporting Yadin's position were Shlomo Gazit, head of IDF intelligence, and Yitzhak Chofi, head of the Mossad. Both argued that a long time would pass before the reactor became operational, and they expressed concern that a military operation would harm Israel's international standing and the peace accord with Egypt. Begin, too, dismissed Sharon's proposal, and in the end it was decided that Dayan would leave for secret talks with France in an attempt to prevent, by diplomatic means, the development of an Iraqi bomb, and that the matter would be reviewed in a future meeting of the committee. In the meantime, Begin and his senior ministers focused on the peace process." End quote. The diplomatic efforts did not achieve what Begin had hoped, and during the Iraq-Iran war, an Iranian operation against the reactor also failed. Thus, by late 1980, Begin had come to believe that an Israeli bombing of the reactor was the only proper course of action. Shilon further writes, quote, "On October 14, 1980, Begin once again convened the Ministerial Committee for National Security Affairs, and once again the intelligence chiefs voiced opposition to a military operation. The chief of staff was in favor, however. Begin proposed two options, both difficult, he warned. One was to bomb the reactor, a move that might invoke a confrontation with Egypt and other countries in the world. The other was to limit Israel's response to diplomatic negotiations, which might or might not ensure that the Iraqis did not achieve nuclear weapons capability. Begin pointed out that the Iranian bombing had delayed the development of the reactor and reduced the risk of radioactive fallout that might have resulted from its destruction. So, if the first option was chosen, it would be better to carry it out sooner rather than later. This is an operation of long-term strategic importance, he explained, because it will deter other Arab countries from attempting to acquire nuclear weaponry. Due to his concern that bombing the reactor might lead to radioactive fallout, Begin stressed that it was better to attack before the nuclear rods were loaded because, quote-unquote, the children of Baghdad are not our enemies. Yadin, himself a former chief of staff, continued to express strong opposition to a bombing of the reactor. After listing the military risks involved in such an operation, he estimated that the Soviet Union might respond with a military action against Israel, that Egypt would be accused by other Arab countries of collusion, and that the United States might respond by delaying the supply of arms to Israel. Finally, he asked that the debate be opened up to include the entire cabinet. Begin agreed, and 2 weeks later presented his proposal at a general cabinet meeting. The military chiefs raised arguments for and against, but as in the peace process with Egypt, Begin did not need their unswerving support. He maintained that it was his duty to confront the greatest threat to have ever loomed over the state of Israel. Since Israel's territory was small, he explained, the principle of the balance of terror, mutual assured destruction, that prevented war between the Soviet Union and the United States did not apply in the case of Israel versus the Arab world. He therefore insisted that the reactor be bombed. In the ensuing vote, 10 ministers voted in favor and 6 against, and the resolution was passed. The chief of staff therefore gave the Israeli Air Force go-ahead to prepare for the operation, which was to take place in January 1981. End quote. So Shilon tells us, and thus was born what Shilon, like many others, called the Begin Doctrine, a doctrine that Israel's enemies cannot be allowed to achieve nuclear capacity so that Israel's existence itself would be threatened. Begin also argued, as we've just seen, that the unique nature of Israeli territory, a tiny bit of land in the larger Middle East, meant that the approach taken in some international situations to nuclear weapons did not apply in the case of Israel. As Shilon further notes, the operation, though scheduled for early 1981, did not move forward for many months for several reasons, including a decision not to dominate the national security news during Reagan's inauguration and the early days of the Reagan administration. We will discuss how the OSIRIC operation ultimately unfolded in future episodes. For now, we must focus on a fascinating anecdote given to us by Shilon about the day in which the ultimate cabinet meeting and vote took place. Shilon writes, quote, "After the meeting, Begin was excited. On his way to work that day, he had justified his proposal before the cabinet meeting and the military chiefs with an argument that he had not raised during the cabinet meeting. Quote, "This morning, when I saw Jewish children playing outside, I decided, no, never again." End quote. This story reveals just how much this operation was a testament to the worldview of Menachem Begin. Begin was a modern Zionist, but he also, unlike some of Israel's other founders, always felt the personal presence of those murdered in the Holocaust, especially the presence of his father and mother. As we will see, again and again, Begin made clear in the months before the attack that the fate of his family was very much on his mind. Today, the OSIRIC operation is described as a modern example, perhaps the modern example, of a preemptive strike against a country developing a nuclear capacity. But it is clear that what motivated Begin here was also the way in which his own soul linked modernity and history, or, if you will, the way the Jewish past lived for Begin in the present. Begin's decision-making process on this matter did indeed involve reason, calculation, the weighing of risks, careful planning. Begin had looked into diplomatic possibilities, as we have seen. And, as Shilon further tells us, he had turned to the Air Force to inquire as to whether a bombing operation was feasible. Begin had done all this, but his deep memory of the past inspired him to ponder what he owed the present and the future. And, in that respect, Begin looking at children blissfully playing, Begin thinking about their future, that was also, incredibly, part of the path to Begin's ordering this extraordinary operation. What Begin may not have realized is that the scene that he saw, the scene that moved him so, the scene of children playing in the streets of Jerusalem, harkened back to a famous Talmudic tale that focused on a well-known prophetic passage. We have discussed in previous episodes how Rabbi Akiva, as described in the Talmud, observing the ruins of the Temple Mount with his sobbing colleagues, joyfully proclaimed to them his certainty in the ultimate fulfillment of Zechariah's prediction. "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for every age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof." And suddenly, in 1980, children playing in Jerusalem were observed by their elder, by a man old enough to be their grandfather. And this man remembered the destructions of the past and sought to ensure that these children would be safe so that they too could raise children that could also play in Jerusalem. A simple experience on the street of the sacred city was part of the planning of one of the most important operations in Israeli history, and therefore it is also a fundamental part of the story of Jerusalem that we seek to tell. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.